Spring is a time of renewal, so why not refresh your home with a little help from Blinds.com? We make getting custom window treatments a minor project with major impact. Choose from premium blinds, shades, and shutters. We even have options for your patio, too. Blinds.com invented a better way to shop for custom window treatments. There's no pushy salespeople in your home or inflated showroom prices. Our design experts can help you find the perfect window treatments on your schedule. We'll even send free samples directly to you. Plus, we can handle the measuring and installation for you. Unlimited window treatments installed for just one low cost. And with Blinds.com, you'll always get transparent pricing. No hidden fees. Our free shipping and 100% satisfaction guarantee can put the spring back into your step. And into your home, too. Shop Blinds.com right now and save up to 40%. Up to 40% off for a limited time at Blinds.com. Blinds.com. Rules and restrictions may apply.
Joining us right now, one of the greats of all time, a Hall of Famer, the former Brave, the former Met, Tom Glavine. Tom, how you doing?
I'm good. How you guys doing?
Hi, Tom. How are you, Tom?
I'm good. Now that I'm out of the cold weather up there, I'm good.
God bless you. Are you on a golf course right now, Tom?
On the driving range. Just finished warming up, getting ready to go play.
God bless you,
and
Tom.
You're getting ready for the Diamond Resorts Invitational, which features like a laundry list of some of the all-time greats, including yourself and Greg Maddux and Bud Rodriguez. Tell us about what you guys are doing.
Well, it's a fun event. Like I said, the Diamond Resorts Invitational. It's third year, I guess, now. Second year with the senior PGA players. So, it's a great event, obviously. It's a lot of fun to get out here and see, like you said, a lot of the great players from baseball, football, some guys in the acting world. So it's kind of a broad spectrum of guys that are here and, playing alongside the PGA Senior Tour players. It's a lot of fun. And, the byproduct, they raise a ton of money for Florida Hospital for Children. So it's a win-win for everybody. And like I said, a chance for us to get out of that cold weather, which is good.
Yeah, that's good stuff. I asked Smoltz this. Who's the better golfer, you, Smoltz, or Maddux?
I would say Smoltzy, but I'm trying to close the gap on him. That's my goal, is to beat him.
All right.
We've been talking a lot today about pace of play, because I think they're meeting this week to discuss trying to speed up the game. And I gave you a compliment. Not only are you a Hall of Famer and all that, but I knew when I was going to Shea Stadium, me and my dad would always say this, oh, Tom Glavine's pitching. Well, if he's on his game, we'll be out of here in 2 hours and 20 minutes. Because
right,
you actually got the baseball, you threw it, you got it back, you threw it again. Why do so many guys take their sweet time? Like, why do you think that occurs right now?
I think that part of it is, to be honest with you, I think part of it is, especially with a lot of the younger guys, they're not real sure what they're trying to do. You know, and I think that's no disrespect. But I think it's become such a game, particularly with the young guys, of guys who are out there and being what I call throwers and not pitchers. So they're having a harder time thinking their way through what it is they're trying to do because, you know, for so long they relied on velocity and they got away with velocity. And now they're in the big leagues. Yeah, velocity helps you get away with some things, but it's not the cure-all. You have to still locate. You have to be able to change speeds. And I think that's where a lot of these guys struggle, is trying to figure out where to intersperse all that with their velocity. So there's a lot of thought process going on. You know, I always used to say, you know, for me, when I was on my game, I didn't think a whole lot. I got the ball, I got on the mound, what pitch am I making, let's go. When you saw me walking around the mound and kind of having that internal timeout, that's when you knew things weren't going well, and it was generally going to be a little bit slower pace because you're trying to think your way through. But I just think for a lot of these guys, it's not something they've had to do as kids, is to think their way through the game. So now when they get to the big league level, and that talent, so to speak, isn't enough to get them through it and get guys out, and they have to think a little bit more, it's a little bit more of a process.
Tom, how about the fact that it seems so much now that, you know, it's not about pitching to contact anymore in baseball? You know, you got to strike guys out. You know, it's a strikeout, it's a walk, it's a home run. I mean, it's so much about that anymore with all this sabermetric stuff. I mean, what's your thoughts on that?
Well, I agree. I mean, it's the what everybody talks about. It's the three outcomes, like you just
said.
A walk, it's a homer, it's a strikeout. And pitching to contact, I think, again, is a foreign subject to a lot of these guys. And again, not necessarily all their fault, because it isn't something they grew up on. I mean, these kids now that are all coming through – are all products of velocity, and everything is how hard do you throw, how hard do you throw, and that's all that mattered. So a lot of these kids, like I say, were so good that talent alone was enough to get them drafted, get them through the minor leagues. Now you get to the big leagues, and talent alone isn't it. And you know, in order to pitch to contact, you have to be able to locate the ball. Mm-hmm. And I think for a lot of these guys, they can't, because it's let me throw it as hard as I can, and if I throw it down the middle, there's a good chance at 95 or 100 miles an hour, I'll get away with it. You know, they don't understand that concept of, you know, stand on the mound. Hey, for me, I know you're looking for a changeup, or I know you're looking for a fastball away, but if I throw it where I want to, you're going to hit it on a part of the bat that you're not going to be able to do much with it. I don't think a lot of these guys have any idea how to do that in today's game.
Mm. We're talking to Tom Glavine, and maybe that answer would answer this as well. You went out there and you pitched every 5 days. You didn't miss starts. You would make 33,
yep. Yep.
34, yep. 35 starts in a year. And I think in today's baseball, that's what we're looking for, because so many guys miss time. So many guys need surgery. So many guys miss seasons. It's rare to find guys who could actually get through a full year of making 30-plus starts, and you did it for over a decade. How, and does it relate to what you were talking about, pitching more to contact?
I think that's part of it, but I think, again, it gets back to the velocity thing, right? All these kids were, again, they're brought up on it. That's what they know. That's what they do. How hard do you throw? That's what everybody asks. That's what everybody wants to know. So these kids are trying to do everything they can to maximize velocity. And when you're maximizing velocity, you're maximizing effort. And to me, when you're going out there on a consistent basis and it's a max effort every pitch, you're going to get hurt. Your body is not built to withstand maximum effort of anything, for that matter. You know, and again, I think for me, and I know Maddox and Smoltz were the same way, we probably threw 5 or 6 pitches a game at max effort. You know, most of it was dial it down maybe to 95% effort and move the ball and locate the ball and do the things you want to do. And every so often, okay, here I got 2 strikes on a guy. Here we go. I'm going to let one fly. And if I miss, I'm going to miss in the right spot where nothing happens. But I'm going to let it go. These kids today, everything's max effort. They, you know, Leo Mazzoni, we always used to talk about, you know, in our bullpen sessions, and we threw more in between starts, and it was all about feel and touch on the baseball. Make the baseball do what you want it to do at a low effort level. A lot of these kids in today's game can't do that. They have to overpower the fastball. They have to overpower their slider and their breaking ball. And again, I just think if you're doing that over and over and over again, your body's just not going to be able to take it for the long haul.
Talking to the Hall of Famer, Tommy Glavine. Tom, what's your thoughts on a 20-second pitch clock between pitches? How about that?
I'd be okay with that, other than with runners on base. I mean, obviously with guys on base, you know, I think that's where it's funny. You talk about pace of play on the one hand, and then on the other hand, I think that's where a lot of guys get in trouble, is when they do get guys on base and things start to go haywire a little bit. They don't know how to slow the game down. Everything speeds up in their mind, and they're going a million miles an hour. So with nobody on base, yeah, there's no reason why you can't make a pitch, get the ball back, get back on the mound, and go within 20 seconds. With guys on base, you know, yeah, you got to think about what you're doing a little bit more. You got to process the situation a little bit more. So that I think, goes out the window. But, yeah, with nobody on base, yeah, get the ball, get on the mound, and go.
That would never have affected you. I mean, that's the funny thing about
right.
it. 20
Not
seconds.
You.
You're probably doing it in 8 or 9 seconds, right, if I had to guess.
Right.
Yeah, it's particularly on nights where you're pitching well. Yeah, because it's okay, give me the ball, let me make my next pitch. You know, because there's not a lot of that, all right, I don't quite feel right, I'm trying to find something, I'm trying to figure something out. So you're kind of going through that mental checklist of, okay, what are you feeling, what are you trying to fix here? So, yeah, some of those nights maybe you've been a little bit closer to 20 seconds, but on the nights where you're on your game and you're doing your thing, yeah, I mean, there's, you know, it seems ample enough time to throw a pitch, get it back from the catcher, and get back on the mound and make another one in 20 seconds.
You know, Tom, we got the Hall of Fame. They're going to announce this year's inductees coming up pretty soon. What's your thoughts on the steroid, quote-unquote steroid guys, Bonds, Clemens? Your thoughts on that, Tom?
That question's been asked a lot lately, and I guess my answer has been I'm kind of indifferent to it. You know, I'm a lot less, outraged maybe than a lot of the older guys are. You know, I know in conversations that I've had over the 3 years that I've been going to Cooperstown, there's a lot of guys, older guys, that are very adamant about that not happening, and I get it. I understand
it. Sure.
I think for our era, for me, you know, the reason I'm indifferent to it is because it was part of our era, and you dealt with it. You know, it wasn't like you could stand on the mound and say, hey, this guy's cheating, or stand in the batter's box and say, hey, this guy's cheating. It didn't matter. You had to still find ways to go out there and be successful and do your thing. And I think that's what I know. That's what I focused on. I didn't focus on what is this guy doing or not doing. I was trying to get my outs and do my thing. So I think that's why you're just indifferent to it, like I say, because it's just was a part of what we did. If the baseball writers decide they want to vote those guys in, then okay, I get it, and I get the outrage that's going to happen. But I'm not going to be one of those guys that's going to say, hey, if any of those guys get in, I'm not coming to Cooperstown because I worked way too hard to get there. So I'm going to keep going and enjoying it.
No, makes sense. Now this ballot's got a very Braves feel to it, which makes me sick. I mean, I couldn't stand the Atlanta Braves. Couldn't stand you. Couldn't stand any of those guys. And maybe I'm kind of biased. As much as I can't stand you guys, I have great respect for you. And one of the guys who I've always had enormous respect for is Andrew Jones, because I look at him and say, I don't know if it's possible to play center field better than Andrew Jones. And Griffey was great, and I'm sure Willie Mays was great, and Jim Edmonds was great. But watching Andrew Jones at Shea Stadium against the Mets was disgusting, because any ball hit off the bat, I thought this guy is somehow going to run it down and make a play. With him behind you, how did you feel about Andrew Jones?
Exactly that way. You were more surprised when Andrew didn't catch a ball than you were when he did. You know, I can't tell you how many times a ball would come off the bat and I'd turn around and think, oh, God. And then, boom, there's Andrew making a great play or making a hard play look routine. I mean, you know, I'm with you. I never saw Willie Mays play. I hear people talk about how great he was. You know, I see highlights of Junior. You know, I didn't have the opportunity to play with Junior every day like I did Andrew. So on an everyday basis, there's nobody I saw play center field better than him. I mean, he could get the ball in the gaps. He would play shallow as could be and take away the blooper, and at the same time, he'd go get the ball over his head. And I can tell you, as a pitcher, you know, you have that feeling of, you know, I want you to take away the blooper, because that, to me, is a pitch that I made that is a good pitch, and I want an out on that. If they're hitting the ball over your head, there's a good chance I made a mistake, so I'm a little bit more, I guess, forgiving of that. But, man, I'll tell you, not only did he take away those bloopers, he took away balls over his head. And you know, he took a ton of pride in his defense and being as good as he was. You know, and I don't know. I mean, I think over time, maybe he'll get some more traction and you know, get a little bit more attention because of that. I think, you know, with all the sabermetrics that are in the game now, I think there's more of a way to look at a career like Andrew's and quantify the importance that he played from a defensive standpoint. But at the same time, don't underestimate what he did offensively. He had some great years offensively.
He was very good defensively, and it's funny. Like, Ozzie Smith was a first ballot Hall of Famer, and I understand the premium of playing shortstop, but obviously offensively they're not even comparable, what Andrew Jones did. As a pitcher, when you compare the premium of a great defensive shortstop to the premium of having a center fielder, is it close in your mind? Because that's always my reference to why Andrew Jones, in my mind, is a Hall of Famer. If we're putting someone in strictly because of defense at shortstop, how should we view center field, which is also important?
Right. No, look, I can tell you I at a minimum would put an equal importance on either having a great shortstop or having a great center fielder. If you have both, fantastic. But, you know, we had years where we had, you know, good shortstops, not tremendous shortstops, but good shortstops that made the routine plays every day. And we had Andrew out in center field that made all the spectacular plays. And it was a solid formula for us. So, you know, look, you if you get a guy that's an outstanding defensive shortstop, great. But I'm not so sure I'd take the outstanding shortstop over the outstanding center fielder.
Tommy, how would you like pitching in this new ballpark down here in Atlanta? Because it seems like that, you know, we used to have the old launching pad, and I guess that was before your time. But this place, the ball flies out of there, too, in this new place. How about that?
Yeah, no, Fulton County was my first couple years in the big leagues. Through 95, we were in Fulton County.
That's right.
It was the launching pad, and you know, we did our best to try and dispel that notion, and I think we did. But it's funny, you know, that new ballpark, it seemed like early in the year the ball was flying. I don't know if it was the weather or if it was the pitching or a little bit of both, because typically in Atlanta the ball starts to fly in the summertime. So it was a little bit odd to see it flying the way that it did in April and May, but I think there's definitely an advantage to right field, and that's probably the Freddie Freeman influence in building that ballpark.
Right.
You know, it's not. I mean, I think it's like anything. You know, if it starts to have a reputation of the ball carries the ball, whatever, like going to Colorado or some of these other ballparks, then as a pitcher, you got to figure out ways to dispel that and take that away. And the best way to do it, obviously, is be down in the zone and keep the ball on the ground and not let him hit in the air as much as you can.
Now I'm going to bring up something negative. All right, I want to go back to game 162, the end of the season against the Marlins. When you...
Tommy, you understand we're Met fans. You know that, right?
I understand.
You know,
you
I know.
And you know what? Let me defend
Tommy,
you.
Let me say, can I say this, too? Because Tommy gets it. Because, Tommy, I don't know if you remember me, but, you know, we... I was not thrilled when the Mets brought you here because I said to myself, wow, this guy killed us all the time as a as a Brave. Now he's coming here. I don't know if I want this guy. And there was a little bit of a situation, and we had a talk. I don't know if you remember this. In the locker room one day. And you got it. And I always respected the fact that you as a ball, because not all the ball players get it this way, that you understood me as a fan and where I was coming from. And I had great respect for you for that, Tom. I got to tell you that.
No, and I know. We had a little bit of a frosty relationship to start out, but it's all good now.
I'm ready to play golf with you, Tom. I'm not in your league, but I'll try, you know.
I understand.
When you...
No, but I'll tell you this, in golf terms, right? If game 162 of that season, if I could have a mulligan, that would be my mulligan for my career.
Yeah. Wow, all right. I'm sure it would be.
Listen, when you warmed up in the bullpen that day, did you know it? Like, did you have a feeling that this was not your bet? Like, it was not going to go well?
Yes, and it was before that. I didn't pitch well, really, the three games leading up to it. And it was I didn't have feel for what I was doing. I was uncomfortable on the mound. And, you know, you go through those stretches during the course of the year. I mean, I went through maybe 1 year in my career where I didn't struggle at some point in time with feel or mechanics. And unfortunately for me that year, it was that part of the season. And, you know, I just didn't have any feel for what I was doing. I was struggling getting comfortable on the mound, and I was trying to figure out. You know, obviously you can kind of fake your way a little bit when games aren't the magnitude of that game. But obviously in that game, it's a little bit harder to fake your way through. So I knew. I was just hoping that, like so many other times in my career, I came out of the bullpen feeling like, oh, my God, what am I going to do today? And something would click when I walked across the lines, but unfortunately it didn't.
You know, Tom, you were on that 06 team, too, which was a darn good team. You guys were the best team in the National League all year. And I mean, obviously, look, it wasn't your fault. We know how it played out with Game 7 and all that kind of stuff. You know, what a disaster. Yadier Molina with the home run and all. How about that team, though? Because I thought we were going to the World Series that year, Tom. How about that 06 team with the Mets?
I agree. That was a solid team and one of the most fun teams I've played on in the course of my career. We had a great group of guys, and everybody was just kind of in it and doing whatever we had to do to get there. And I agree with you. I thought when Indy made that catch,
right.
That was our sign that we were going to the World Series. Unfortunately, it didn't work out, but you know, that was a ton of fun that year and being a part of all that in New York. And, you know, it's funny, you know, people, you know, the Yankees get so much attention in that town, and rightly so. And I would always have people tell me, yeah, but when the Mets play well, you wait and see what this town is like. And it was true. It was different. It was different than, you know, a lot of things that I experienced in my career with the way the city came together and the excitement that was there. And I definitely got a sense of what people were talking about in terms of the excitement when the Mets did well. And it was a ton of fun to be a part of that. It just, unfortunately, didn't end the way we wanted it to end.
No.
In that following season, and you mentioned you didn't pitch well down the stretch, and really no one played well. I mean, for the collapse to occur, it's not one guy. It was a bunch of guys to blow a 7.5-game lead with 17 to go, whatever it was.
For the better part of September, we did everything in our power to get Philadelphia into that position where it came down to the last day of the season. No question about it. I mean, we didn't play well at times. We had things go against us at times. It was just kind of it was kind of the perfect storm, so to speak, in terms of things that could go wrong went wrong, and we wound up in that position that we, you know, arguably should have never wound up in the first place. But you know, I mean, it just goes to show you know, that. It's a full 162, and you got to play it all the way through. And you know, you just got to be playing good baseball at the right time, and we weren't.
When did you sense it was slipping away? Because it was a significant lead. Like, as a fan, I was confident that it was a big enough lead where, you guys aren't playing well, but you'll hold on. When did it start to get a little nerve-wracking to you that you could blow it?
You know, I think as a player, when you start to get around that five-game mark or under it, now it starts to get a little bit queasy about what's going on. And I think for us, you know, that was the case. I think it was the same way with us. You look at it and you go, well, okay, well, yeah, but, you know, we still got a 7-game lead. We still got a 6-game lead. And then all of a sudden when it's like 5 or 4, You know, now you know how quickly that number can change over the course of a couple of days. So it's, you know, I think once you get to that point, you know, all right, this we got to right the ship here.
Mm. Tommy, now where you play? You're in Florida? I'm assuming you're in Florida, right?
Yeah, we're in Orlando, so it's nice down here. Weather's good. A little bit cloudy, a little bit rainy at times, but temperature-wise, a whole lot better than it is up there.
And,
yeah.
And you've got
even tell me, Tom.
You'll be there soon enough.
Well, 2 weeks from tomorrow.
Yeah, you got
two
it.
2 weeks from tomorrow.
You got a laundry list of legends playing golf with you. Pudge, John Smoltz, Greg Maddux, Reggie Jackson, Brian McCann, Johnny Damon. So it should be fun. The Diamond Resorts Invitational, yep. And we appreciate you coming on as always.
Tommy, hit him straight, man. Make sure you get Smoltz. Get him eventually. Okay?
All right, I'll get him. I appreciate it. Thank you, guys.
All right, Tom. Appreciate it, man.
The Hall of Famer,
yep.
Tommy Glavine,
and he's a good guy. Like I said, I brought that situation up, and he. I'm telling you, man, he couldn't have been nicer to me that day in the locker room, and you know he got it. He got
a lot
it.
Of guys.
I always appreciated that Tommy really understood where I was coming from.
Oh, yeah. And
a
lot
it wasn't
of guys,
a personal thing. You
a lot
know
of guys
mean?
Don't, but he
right.
definitely got it.
He did.
You know, you think back to that collapse in 07. What was weird is they were collapsing, and then they went to Florida. And I remember this because I traveled. I went down to Florida that weekend to go see Mets Marlins, hoping that they could turn it around, and they did. They went 3 out of 4 in Florida, and it felt like they had righted the ship. And they came home for a 7-game homestand, up 2.5 games. And you're thinking, all right, they can't blow this. They got swept by the Nationals. They lost a makeup game to the Cardinals. And then they lost those games to the Marlins, 2 out of 3. Mm, even though John Maine had that great moment on a Saturday.
Oh, my God, I remember that well.
Unbelievable.
Right.
They won that game like 12-0, 13-0.
Right. And wasn't it a brawl in that game, too?
Yes.
They had that brawl, right?
Miguel Olivo.
Right. Was that the game
Jose
you almost pitched
Reyes.
A no-hitter, too?
Yes.
It was, right?
Who broke it up? Like a backup
catcher
broke
yeah,
it up.
Yeah, I remember that.
And it was like a little roller to third base.
Right.
It was a swinging bunt.
Right.
I
got to
look this up now and get the answer.
John
Paul
Maine.
Hoover was the guy.
Is that who it was?
The John backup
Maine.
Catcher.
Oh, my God.
The guy who came in the game because the starting catcher got ejected.
And remember, Maine
from
also.
The fight.
Maine was also the guy to pitch game 6 of that playoff series with the Cardinals.
Yes.
And, you know, winning that game.
Yep.
Yeah. No, I know. Out of pain.
Ah, memories.
Oh, man, like the corners of our minds, right?
Yeah.
Misty watercolor memories, the way we were.
These aren't exactly memories of championships. Well, they're more of pain, as you would say.
Spring is a time of renewal, so why not refresh your home with a little help from Blinds.com? We make getting custom window treatments a minor project with major impact. Choose from premium blinds, shades, and shutters. We even have options for your patio, too. Blinds.com invented a better way to shop for custom window treatments. There's no pushy salespeople in your home or inflated showroom prices. Our design experts can help you find the perfect window treatments on your schedule. We'll even send free samples directly to you. Plus, we can handle the measuring and installation for you. Unlimited window treatments installed for just one low cost. And with Blinds.com, you'll always get transparent pricing. No hidden fees. Our free shipping and 100% satisfaction guarantee can put the spring back into your step. And into your home, too. Shop Blinds.com right now and save up to 40%. Up to 40% off for a limited time at Blinds.com. Blinds.com. Rules and restrictions may apply.